Hello and welcome back. I'm Pierre Daly, and this is Inside is Capital. Today on the show, we're tackling a topic that sits at the very core of Canada's economic future: literacy. Not just financial literacy, but literacy in its broadest and most human sense, the ability to read, write, understand, navigate, and participate fully in society. We're joined by two leaders who see this issue from both ends of the spectrum. First, Melanie Valsin, President and CEO of United for Literacy, an organization that has been opening doors to learning for more than 125 years. Melanie has dedicated over two decades to helping adults across Canada build the foundational skills needed to thrive, whether it's reading with confidence, navigating digital tools, or gaining the literacy required to advance in the workforce. She brings a national lens to the reality that one in five working-age Canadians struggles with basic reading and what that means for our social cohesion, competitiveness, and future prosperity. And second, Matthew Latimer, Executive Director of the Federation of Independent Dealers and a board member of the United for Literacy Foundation. Matthew brings the financial lens, where low financial literacy is leaving Canadians making costly mistakes, misunderstanding basic savings tools like RRSPs and TFSAs, and facing retirement risks they're not equipped to manage. His work sits at the intersection of regulation, investor behavior, and the evolving role of advice in an increasingly complex financial world. Together, they help us understand a critical truth. Literacy, in all its forms, isn't just a social issue, it's an economic one, and its impact is already shaping Canadians' financial decisions, workforce readiness, and long-term well-being.
This is Insight is Capital. Join us in our fireside chats with some of the most fascinating people in finance to discuss their insights on life, markets, macro, investment strategy, and much more.
Melanie, Matthew, welcome. It is so great to have you both here.
Thanks for having us, Pierre.
Yeah.
Thank you both again for joining me. Before we begin, I wonder if you'd please tell us a little bit about yourselves, the arc of your careers, and what you're working on these days.
Thank you, Pierre. My name is Matthew Latimer. I'm the Executive Director of the Federation of Independent Dealers. And we are a network of independent dealers across the country and are going into our 30th year of doing advocacy for them, working with regulators, advisors, investor advocates, and having conversations about the country to ensure the future and prosperity and viability of financial advice in Canada, wherever.
Thank you, Matthew, and I'm Mel Valsin. Again, Tef, thank you so much for having us. So I'm the president and CEO of United for Literacy. You described the organization earlier. We work coast to coast to bring literacy to all Canadians, all across all ages, literacy support so that they can succeed at school, at work, or in life in general. And so I started in this organization, more than 20 years ago, as the Quebec and Nunavut manager. United for Literacy used to be called Frontier College. So I'm just saying this because some people might know us under that name. And we just celebrated 125 years, 20 of them I was with, involved with. And so it took me 20 years, but slowly climbed up to become the CEO 3 years ago. And I've always, this organization is my passion, of course, but I also really believe in the mission. I see every day how literacy can change lives, transform communities. I know we'll get into that in a minute. But I'm also a part of many national alliances and networks where we work with youth or other literacy partners. And I see it every day, again, not only in our organization, but through all the networks I'm part of, that literacy can change everything.
Thank you very much, Melanie. I just want to say, it took me a little while to really come to appreciate how large this issue is. I know we talked last year and I understood the gravity of it then, but over the course of the year and thinking about our conversation and your efforts, I sort of came to realize, wow, this is really an important and profound societal issue that really needs to be tackled. When you look at the latest Canadian literacy measures, the results show that 1 in 5 adults are struggling with basic reading. What do you think Canadians misunderstand most about the true stakes of literacy in society and in our economy?
Well, first of all, Pierre, I want to say that that's it. The latest data shows that 1 in 5 Canadian adults is struggling to read, to write, to decipher complex text, and is also struggling with digital and financial literacy. And these are the results of 2024. Literacy levels are measured every 10 years. And so the last time that we measured, we were at 17%. So the trend is not going the right way. We have more people than 10 years ago who are struggling with their literacy, So I wanted to start with that. And the implications of that, as you mentioned, are tremendous. We know so many studies have shown that literacy has an impact on poverty, on income, on having access to stable housing, having access to employment, of course. So those 20% Canadian that are situated at the two lowest levels of literacy are struggling with a lot of other barriers in their lives. So we really need to do something because, you know, the current government is trying to build Canada. All of Canada is trying to build Canada. And we need all hands on deck and all hands well trained. That's kind of my little motto here. And the impact of raising the literacy levels in this country by only 1%. Would actually translate into a growth of between 60 billion to 90 billion in terms of GDP. So do you see how we need to do something about literacy? And it's also a solution that we've never tried to tackle unemployment, So we've never really seen literacy, for example, like a national literacy strategy, as a great potential policy solution to many of the other issues that this country is facing.
It's, you know, it's all too easy to, you know, see people in our world, you know, suffering or homeless or unhoused or, you know, struggling to get jobs or being, you know, long-term unemployed or unemployable for one reason or another, but specifically, you know, as it relates to literacy, it's all too easy to take it for granted and to say, oh, well, you know, someone else will help them. I mean, you know, there's so much that we all as individuals can do, you know, whether it's small things or actively participating in this effort. By the way, I was curious, I did the math, you know, there are roughly 35 million Canadians 15 years of age or older. So roughly at 20%, the 1 in 5 that you talked about, that means 7 million Canadians are struggling with literacy. Does that sound right to you? Is it 7 million of us?
I know
7 million.
I know, Pierre, it's hard to believe. What I can say is that, yes, it sounds right. And if you, so it's 20% of adults, right? So the math would...
Yeah, that's what I was curious about. How many adult-aged people are there? I mean, citizens are there in Canada? And that number was 35 million people over the age of 15. Mm-hmm. So if 20% of 35 million is the number, then we're talking about, okay, maybe it's not exactly 7 million, but it's still an astonishing number to think that, you know, 5 million people could be struggling with basic reading, right? I mean, that's wow.
Totally agree. And I'll add to this that as we speak, we have about 1 million children that are not reading at grade level. So if we don't intervene also early with those children, these children will roll into those numbers, the horrendous numbers that you just cited. So we really have to start early. We have to work with adults right now because they are the workforce and the citizens and the voters right now. We have to equip people that are in their adulthood right now, but we also have to do a lot of preemptive work or preventative work and start working on literacy and financial literacy early with the children and youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you, I mean, just to do the math, I mean, I think the number, the $60 billion number is an astonishing number when you consider that adding 1%, you know, adding 1% to the literacy statistics would raise GDP by $60 billion to $90 billion a year. When you do the math against 7 million folks, that's $10,000 per capita.
That's huge return on investment. That's it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we're talking
about $5 an hour.
Yeah.
Annually, right? If you consider like the living wages that people are getting paid or the non-living wages people are getting paid who are struggling with employment, that's $5 an hour over the course of any given year, assuming full-time employment.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see where like that increment is actually, you know, is actually very easy to relate to, like to understand how that modest change in literacy standards can actually translate into that much economic growth.
Exactly. And I think
go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I apologize. Okay. Yes, I believe that some countries have understood that. So we have many examples around the world now, Australia, the UK, Ireland, South Africa, who have designed and deployed national literacy strategies because they understand that it's not just at the provincial or state level that literacy has to be handled, because it goes beyond, you know, primary and secondary level education, if I can say, or primary and high school. So we have examples in the world where governments have understood, our nations have understood, that it's important to invest in literacy across all ages, nationally, so that we can have, again, a well-informed, well-trained workforce and citizens that can engage in all activities in their communities, engage fully and seize opportunity.
Yeah. And ensuring the literacy of 1 million children is the low-hanging fruit of this whole exercise. I mean, you know, Melanie, you've seen firsthand that adult learners face very different barriers than traditional students. What have you learned about how to design literacy programs that actually work in communities, especially for adults juggling jobs, families, or financial stress?
The good news, Chad, is that this is not rocket science. It's a very simple formula. At United for Literacy, what we say always is that the community is our classroom. So we go and we teach where adults and families are already gathering. So you're going to find us in community centers, in detention centers, unfortunately. But where adults are in their social life, or when they're getting service or support for other barriers that they face in their life, we will be there and bring the literacy programming or financial literacy programming, so that they don't have to run from one side to the other. And they're already in a space where they feel safe. They feel they feel comfortable to learn. I'll give you a great example. We just started this program last summer in partnership with the Edmonton Food Bank. They have clients that come twice a week. They hang around. Sometimes they might have a little something to drink and a coffee, and they get a few services.
Right.
So the food bank approached us saying, hey, we kind of have a group of people here that could really benefit. These are all adults, really benefit from further training. And they would really be interested in starting in their learning journey. So instead of us staying in the classroom somewhere, we are sending our instructors straight at the food bank. So twice a week, we have a cohort of adults that are coming to get their goods, to feed their families, but they also have workshops and tutoring sessions so that they can increase their skills, both their soft skills and also their skills that, you know, more hard skills in literacy, meaning reading, writing, math. And it's been extremely successful. Again, at United for Literacy, we're there to help launch people on their learning journey, make them gain confidence so that they can feel empowered to learn. We help them find the opportunity that then suits their the rest of their journey. Yeah.
It must be very gratifying work. I wonder if you could, you know, you could talk about the, you know, once again, because I thought it was a great story, the mining community that you worked with in Northern Canada.
Yeah, this partnership is over now, but we used to work in Shefferville. This is a northern community in Northern Quebec, mining community surrounded by two indigenous communities as well. And the mine had asked us to, well, their goal was to hire more people from the surrounding communities, but there was a need also for skill development. So we were contracted by the mine there. It was an iron ore mine to send two instructors in the community, and the instructors would actually work on site with the staff that were hired from the two surrounding indigenous communities. And we were hired to help those folks improve their skills, mainly, I would say, in reading and writing, but mainly in digital literacy so that they could access other opportunities. A lot of the people that were hired in the surrounding communities were often hired at entry-level positions, and the company, great for them, was wanting to invest in their development so that they could access to being a team leader and eventually a manager or a supervisor on one of the sites. So we were there really underground using concrete example of their daily work to teach them, to help them improve their literacy skills. And one example that always stayed with me was that one of the men there wanted to, he had a lot of charisma, I hear, from the colleagues that work with him. He had a lot of charisma, was a natural leader, but had never used a computer before. So he couldn't be promoted into a team lead because you had to, you know, enter data in the computer, create your schedule with Excel and et cetera. So one of our instructors worked with him for only 6 weeks. Yeah, it only took 6 weeks for this man to be able to navigate, you know, turn on the computer, navigate an Excel sheet, enter data in it, print it, and send it by email, right? So sometimes, and from there, when you give those basic tools, basic Excel, basic Word, and sending, you know, emailing or how Outlook works, after that, we know that an adult is able to kind of self-teach and learn more and more. We've all done this. So again, we sometimes, our learners just need a little shoulder to, you know, a little support to get started, and then they're on their way to for better opportunities. Yeah, to better.
You can you know, Melanie, you can see where it would be so easy for that person to get lost in the shuffle. You know, if you said, oh, you know what, John, send me an email about that, and I'll look into it for you, and then John is sitting there thinking, what? I don't know how to do that. And, but he's not going to say, I don't know how to do that, because, you know, it was, you know, your dignity and your pride is on the line, right? Because you don't want to admit you don't know how to do something that we all take, you know, we hear and in this conversation, take it for granted and do every day 100 times without even thinking about it. But when you're, you know, face to face with somebody who hasn't got that experience, doesn't know how to do that, doesn't even know where to begin because they have a literacy struggle, and, you know, a computer struggle, you know, or both. And you can't anticipate that person's going to say, oh, by the way, I don't know how to do that.
I
right. So you're, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but your approach at UFL is very dynamic. It's very adaptable and dynamic to each community, each cohort of people that you're serving. So you go in and you see how you can fill that gap effectively. It's not just a cookie cutter, we're going to teach you how to read kind of thing. It's, you know, how do we get close enough and get the trust of the community that, you know, they come to us, they're attracted to the conversation, they're attracted to the possibilities that they could advance.
Exactly. Yeah, no cookie cutter approach here. So we work with about 200 communities across the country, and they each have their own distinct, you know, traditions or ways of working or context. So we really partner with other organizations to deliver our programs. So we partner with, as I mentioned earlier, community centers, settlement agencies, detention centers, schools. And so with the partner, we design a solution, a literacy solution that will meet the needs that are present in the community that we are working with. So that makes it more efficient. When a solution is customized, we all know you usually get better results. I was also thinking, Pierre, of an example. When you were talking about trust earlier, I recently was in Kingston. We have some programming in the federal penitentiaries that are located in Kingston. And we're doing a great project with some of the individuals who are incarcerated. They're working with us on developing content for the broader population that is detained.
Right.
And so just to say, we were having a discussion with some of the men that are incarcerated, and that this was in a medium security prison. And this young man was, 25, 26, just a little bit older than my own son. And we were having a wonderful conversation, very open. The trust had been built. And so he disclosed to us in this little conversation group that the first time that he had ever touched a computer was when he got incarcerated 4 years ago.
Wow.
This young man is from downtown Toronto, not downtown, but from Toronto, you know.
Right.
You know, he's not, he was born here. He grew up in Toronto. So I couldn't help but think, but how can a young man that is about 25 years old, how can he have never had access to the technology that is now also such a, so granted, we take it for granted for our children, yeah, for sure. And I was thinking, but is this a postal code thing? You know, like, is it because he's born in a certain area of Canada, in a certain neighborhood that we know have, because I know where he was born, but there's less services in his neighborhood, right, lower socioeconomic context, and he didn't have access to the same opportunities and technology that my own children, you know, again, took for granted. So I think there's something there, something systemic that we have to address as well, where it's not, for me, literacy is not an individual responsibility or an individual issue. It's a collective societal issue, because we got to make sure that all our youth are well-equipped, I'm saying concretely with the technology, but also with the skills to then become great contributors to society. And if I go back, yeah, to my example of this young man incarcerated, we recently, 2 years ago, the federal government, about 2 years ago, came out with a national framework to reduce recidivism, because we also, right, know that involvement with criminal justice in this country, like, these are big dollars that we're spending on justice in this country. So again, right, raising the bar on literacy might help young men like such as the one that I just described to make different choices if they have strong learning, positive and strong learning journey, instead of, as he was describing, being a bit in the streets and, you know, dipping his toes in criminal behavior. Because he didn't have the role models at home, and he didn't have the tools that he needed to be able to continue school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of the, you know, the Maslow quote, you know, if all you have is a hammer, every problem is a nail.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. And I think it's so, you know, like, it's so easy to think that, you know, these folks who are, you know, underprivileged, unhoused, incarcerated, fall into the wrong, you know, the wrong way of life. It's so easy to think that, you know, somehow their problem is something that they chose. And often it's the lack of options. It's the lack of choice that drives people into, you know, that way of just trying to survive in life. I don't think most people who are struggling with what we're talking about want to. They don't want to be a toll on society. They want to be contributing to society if they have given the opportunity. And that's really all they need, is to be given the chance and the opportunity. And that starts with something as very basic as what we're talking about, which is literacy. But I was thinking, you know, like if you raise literacy and that contributes, for example, $60 to $90 billion more to GDP, that's $60 to $90 billion less toll on our social system. Suddenly, you know, those folks who are now contributing to society are no longer putting the same toll on society. So they feel better. That means that you know, we take the burden off taxpayers. But I do want to go back, Melanie, to what you said earlier about other countries like Ireland and Australia, for example, who have implemented and coordinated national strategies for adult literacy. From your experience, what would a truly effective modern Canada-wide literacy strategy look like? Why does this need to become a national priority right now?
Now is the moment, you said it, Pierre, because I don't think we want to wait any longer before building a national literacy strategy. Actually, the whole literacy sector is mobilizing right now, because our offer is to the federal government is to work in partnership with them to create that strategy. And so we've started doing some research already, looking at other models that you just mentioned in other countries. But what we know for sure, as practitioners in the sector, we know that a national literacy strategy needs to cover, you know, the entire life cycle, so from birth to the end of life, so 0 to 99 years old. We know that we need to have. We're recommending that we expand the mandate, for example, of Employment and Social Development Canada, so that they can really take this on with us and involve. What we want to do is to involve all of Canada in it. By this, I mean that this is not something that we feel just the federal government or the provincial governments should be deploying. We need to work with the private sector. We need to work with employers. We need to design this with the practitioners that are doing the work every day, but also with our government leaders and our private sector leaders, so that we are not just building a strategy that will be efficient on paper, but we really want to do something very transformative. We also want to make sure that we do as much, I mentioned that earlier a little bit as well, that we do as much work with the current adult population, but that we also do a lot of work, preventative work with young children, the youth, so that we prepare the next generation and they don't become those statistics. And finally, I would say, what we need is to have more data, Pierre. So we have this data, these levels of, literacy, but we want a bit more data. We need to do more research to make sure that the strategy will be efficient. Again, for me personally, I've been in the field for 25 years. I'm not interested in putting any kind of energy in the strategy that will be shelved. I really want us to be able to make a difference. So we're working with a lot of people in the sector and talking to the federal government as well to be able to start creating this strategy.
Boy, it's just so easy to take, you know, literacy of any kind for granted. You know, until we actually spoke to you in the last year, you know, I really had no, as an organization myself, personally, I really had no idea how bad the problem was. I always thought, you know, it was bad elsewhere. You imagine, you know, we have a social system. It's just hard to believe that can happen. You know, I want to get into the topic of financial literacy as well, because it's literacy of another kind, right? Like I look back on my time as an advisor, Matthew. I look back on my time as an advisor, and I think, you know, boy, did I ever take it for granted that when I was, you know, rattling off financial, you know, conversation with my prospective clients or my clients. Boy, was I ever taking it for granted that people understood what the hell I was talking about. You know, like, what is he talking? But, you know, people, again, it's that dignity and that pride. There was the latest research, for example, from C.D. Howe, from the C.D. Howe Institute, shows that fewer than two-thirds, in fact, 53% of Canadians can answer basic financial questions on topics like interest, inflation, or what diversification means, right? You know, Matthew, from where you sit, what are the real consequences you're seeing when investors make decisions in what is otherwise a low literacy environment?
You know, great discussion so far, Pierre. Great question as well. It's very easy to hear the literacy issue and believe that it's out there. It's far away from us. But with 1 in 5 Canadians struggling with basic literacy, the numbers you just mentioned from C.D. Howe can be added to those in terms of the gap in financial literacy. It's almost like a second step. You know, one may be able to learn to read, and then further from there, one needs to understand terminology, interest rates, compounding, and different sorts of things that can dramatically affect your life. So the question, literacy is it's an economic infrastructure, you could say. And although it's easy in big cities and in financial services to presume that everybody is literate, those that are answering the C.D. Howe survey are likely literate. So it's an entire blind spot. We are in Canada the pride of the G7 in terms of mutual fund and advice distribution, with a penetration of approximately 40%, higher than many, many other places in the world. And of course, we'd like to get that number higher to provide professional advice and interpretive understanding to those that have these challenges. And of course, it's true that what Melanin says, that an increase in literacy, or, you know, I might use so bold as to say an increase in the penetration of financial advice into those kind of marketplaces would also increase economic activity and benefits to Canada. It's a hidden cost to the whole financial system, especially the localized communities and families that don't have the benefit of participating in savings and investing and some of the benefits that this can provide for the long term.
It's astonishing, right? I mean, I you know, the more time, this is such a, like, the financial business is such a an extraordinary business, because the amount of knowledge that exists in this business is enormous. And when you start to, and the more time you spend in it, the more you realize how little you actually know. So it's not hard to see that people in general are not spending their time immersed in conversations about their non-taxable accounts, their RSPs, their TFSAs, and so much is taken for granted. But I think one of the things that stuck out to me with that report, again, is how poorly Canadians understand RSPs and TFSAs, and how they still end up making coin flip decisions without realizing that that can cost them tens of thousands of dollars very easily over time. And what do you think is driving the confusion? And what do you think advisors, how do you think the industry should respond? And what do you think we can do about that?
Well, I think the industry, regulators, and sort of the financial community generally has come to accept that more disclosure is not going to provide better decision-making skills for investors. And they've done surveys to confirm that it's not all read and certainly not all understood. In my opinion, what needs to be done is a distribution of local financial professionals, people from the community that they can trust, people that have some solid literacy skills, some solid financial literacy skills that can distribute that out locally to their communities. One idea that crossed my mind was whether regulators could enable a CE credit or some limited amount of CE credits for distributing financial education into communities, right? When you teach, you learn, and when you learn, you teach. But there's innumerable benefits that can be reaped from distributing this knowledge to everyone. The suboptimal investment choices that are made when you don't understand, it's very easy to agree with somebody or to click a button, the big green button that says yes, you know, whatever color button.
Yeah.
And to go ahead with an investment. And it seems our scams are at an all-time high. The sophistication with AI of the scams that are out there are at an all-time high. The threats of losing an entire retirement simply for not being able to understand or to read is, you know, a threat that can't be let continue. So anything we can do to drive investors to people that can speak to them in their own language at their own level and to communicate these concepts and to protect them. The distribution of financial advice is the most important thing we can do in financial services right now.
We take it for granted. Like, it's a matter of fact, right? With these solutions, these products, these wrappers, you know, we take it for granted that they're available widely. They're prolific. They're, you know, they're available through all financial institutions. It's standardized. But for someone who has never actually like gone into learning about all these different things or don't understand financial lingo or, you know, the lexicon of money and products and solutions that are out there, you really like have to stop and think, you know, people, first of all, most people work very hard for their money. They work very hard to have the discipline to save it. And then to get to the place where they're in front of an advisor and at a financial institution, and that person who is possibly taking it all for granted that they understand what they're being spoken to about is expecting them to feel easy, first of all, about parting with their money. The money that was in their bank account, putting it into an RSP, a mutual fund, an ETF, a GIC even. Like, so I have to sign it over to you. I have to transfer it into this thing. I can't touch it for a year. And if I do, I get penalized. Like if we're talking about something as simple as a GIC, you can see where somebody who's underinformed, where financial literacy is concerned, might say, you know what? I don't understand what you're talking about. I don't want to do it. And then because they don't understand it or the time isn't being taken to help them understand it in a way that's relatable to them, they're hitting the pause button on the opportunities. They're losing the opportunity because there isn't somebody at the on the other side of the table making them or helping them to understand it. So you can see where there are a lot of folks out there who are never going to get into the financial system because they're never going to reach that place. They might never reach the place where somebody actually gets through to them to explain it. As the products and the risks and the tools become more complex, where do you see in your work, where are you seeing the biggest gaps opening up or emerging? And how can better financial literacy reshape outcomes for the households facing, you know, longevity risk or decumulation challenge, rising long-term, like healthcare is a huge risk.
All of that's true. And it's a multifaceted, difficult, complex problem. I don't think it's a problem that can be solved with a handful of PDFs and some time. I think you need a professional that has experience and exposure to outcomes and somebody that's done a proper financial planning process before and that has seen these things that can really guide individuals. So we need a pathway for community members to become financial advisors and to get that experience and to get that knowledge and to share it maybe outside of those that have graduated from a college financial services or commerce degree. Things in pensions, such as the default opt-in instead of the default opt-out or employee ESPPs, DRIP programs and things like this, they should be enabled by default with an opt-out option for those that can read the opt-ins and the opt-outs. But it's almost a conundrum of a problem. The foundational pieces are what Melanie spoke to in the basic literacy. If there's no literacy and there's no confidence and competence to even approach a financial advisor or to seek one out by using a computer, how can they grasp onto that first and second rung of the financial services ladder and investing? There are, I'm quite sure, many people throughout Canada that have resources and have assets that also are not literate. I'm sure there are opportunities for financial advisors to work with folks that own businesses and do different things sans literacy. However, that being said, the ever-evolving regulatory landscape that raises costs and entry barriers for the least financially able or servicing the smallest of accounts to get started are a challenge, right? Financial advisors need to get paid. There are regulatory costs and licensing fees and whatnot associated with oversight for every client that you onboard. And intermediating those at this level would probably be a very critical piece of addressing the problem.
And thank you so much, Matthew. And I would like to add to this that I like your proposed solution of having people going in community being trained to do so, of course. I also think, and this is something that we're, if I go back to the idea of also of a national literacy strategy, one thing that is core and that would help also the with financial literacy is to start writing things in clear language. You know, I'm very excited because the federal government just came out with the first ever clear language framework for Canada. So this is great. It hasn't been publicized that much, but I'll take care of that part. I have to, and I really believe that if we start using, I think the lingo is very, it creates barriers. I think that sometimes we use long words and complicated words to explain a very simple context, concept. So we have to start thinking and writing and expressing ourselves in clear language if we want to make sure that people. So I'm talking to the financial industry here, but also to society in general. For example, at United for Literacy, we always say when we write a piece, which and it you know it goes to the public, we try to write it in grade eight level to respect the meeting levels of some of our learners, right? So I'm not saying that every single piece has to be written in a grade eight level, but that could be also a solution to have documents that are simple, that use simpler words, that use simpler words to describe more complex products. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love your idea, Matthew, that you proposed, which is that, you know, advisors should be granted as part of their continuing education requirement credits for going out and into the community and volunteering their knowledge to, you know, the most needful of that knowledge. Like if you incent advisors to go out and volunteer their time to help educate the public, and that can be done many different ways. It can be done through public appearance. It can be done through classroom appearance. It can be done through video. It can be done through any number of means where you know, public outreach can occur. Advisors have this opportunity to contribute to this problem, to solving this problem in very meaningful ways. And there's, I think all said, there's probably about 90 or 100,000 advisors in Canada.
Yeah.
That's a significant task force that you can tap into as part of this literacy, push.
There are a number of advisors out there that do a great deal of charitable work. And I shouldn't ignore to mention that, but to give them a little bit of credit for doing it. And to incent new advisors to do more of that, they could train community members that are taking their financial advisory courses to help pass the exams. They could, you know, address more difficult topics on an as-needed basis. There's a lot of things that they could do. I love this idea here.
It's also very gratifying. It's very gratifying work. That's the thing. I think that's underestimated. I mean, I think it's so gratifying that it even probably overshadows the incentive greatly. I mean, maybe, but just to get people in the door to start doing it, once they're doing it and they realize like the value of what they're doing, and they realize the value of their knowledge in any given community, It's incredible, like how quickly things could change as well.
Yeah, we have at United for Literacy a wonderful network of 1,500 volunteers year in, year out that get involved with us across the country to share their knowledge, tutor a child, help an adult increase their literacy skills. And we always survey them and want to get your feedback. And it's always the same. Everyone always says, each of our volunteers always say, I gained more than I gave. I learned more than I thought.
Right.
So yeah, I think it's the, to your point, when people volunteer, you know, they feel in a meaningful way, they feel very much rewarded. To that effect, also, I want to invite all your all your listeners.
Absolutely.
To if they want to get involved with us at United for Literacy, they can contribute by becoming a tutor, a donor, a partner. But also one simple way to get involved over the next little while would be to also participate in our game night for literacy, that an event that we will host in Toronto in March. More information on our website, but I think that could be a nice little introduction to our activities and a great occasion to meet Matt and Pierre. I hope you both will be there.
And you, Melanie.
Yeah, I will be there.
I was at the last one, and you know what, Melanie, it was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed ourselves at the event.
It's always a great one, for sure.
Yeah, without even getting into the topic of literacy, it was a very enjoyable evening, but I think most importantly, the cause is worthy of great attention. Your offer to advisors is exciting. The work you're doing is so vital that to literally, and I use the word seriously, not loosely, literally change the lives of at least some part of those 20% of Canadians. I mean, think about it. That's millions of Canadian folks that we can all take part in helping. I was astonished. Just doing that math yesterday before our conversation today, realizing 20% of adult Canadians is somewhere between 5 and 7 million folks. Like, that's mind-blowing when you stop and think about it, that many people in this great country of ours could be struggling with literacy is wild to me.
It's an enormous problem, Pierre, if you consider that we're providing advice to 4 out of 10 Canadians, and that 5 out of 10 Canadians are having challenges with literacy. All the financial advisors in Canada are competing for 1 out of 10 Canadians to be their prospective clients, unless they're willing to dive into the issue. It's an enormous issue.
Mm. Yeah.
And we can't do it alone. So yes, United for Literacy works all across Canada to bring supports to children, youth, and adults and give access to literacy programming and financial literacy programming or programs. But we can't do it alone. That's it. We need to work with government. We need to work with industry. When it comes to financial literacy, I love this idea of getting the financial advisors involved. So again, for me, it's a lifetime commitment that I have to bring as many people as I can to the work table so that we can find solutions that work, that are concrete, that are simple too. We don't need more complex structures. We need to make sure though that everyone kind of rolls in the same direction. And first, to me, the most important thing is that people need to understand that we have a literacy issue in this country, because again, like you, Pierre, I think that some people do not have that knowledge. Once they understand, they're like, okay, what do we do? Well, let's all work together to find solutions, whether it's, and when I say together, it can be the kind of solution that Matthew was talking about, but also, again, people can donate to their local literacy organization, to United for Literacy. Get involved, get the business they work in involved as a sponsor or funder of literacy initiatives. And also, people can volunteer or join us at game night.
When is game night again?
March 12th, 2026.
March 12th, 2026. Well, I'm looking forward to it, Melanie. And in the meantime, I'm looking forward to seeing you both there. Thank you both so much for being here and for illuminating this critical issue.
Thank you so much for having us, Pierre.
My pleasure. Thank you, Pierre.